Good morning, everyone. It's the 31st of March, last day of March. We're continuing. Mark's going to continue to read through Phillips versus the State of Missouri. We're ready for Chapter 6. verse is, Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happened unto you. 1 Peter 4:12. I can really relate to that verse. You know, here I was, I had my whole career before me. I was ready to start a graduate program, master's program through the University of Kansas. I already had completed my undergraduate degree from University of Kansas, and now I was faced with having to look at all of that going down the tube, so to speak, because of this situation of not licensing those in perversion and placing children with lesbians and homosexuals. So I'm going to turn this over to Mark. He's going to read. Mark, I'm going to have you read chapters 6 and 7 today.
Chapter 6, the fire intensifies. Beloved, think not strange concerning the fire trial, which to try you. So some strange thing happened unto you. 1 Peter 4:12. My life seemed to be in utter chaos. At this time, my son was very ill. My life at work was tremendously hostile. I began to sense a great spiritual warfare. Satan would continually attack my family and me through my son's illness and the fight going on in the workplace. I remember at times I wondered if God really was going to intervene for me. Many doubts plagued me. My son was in 24-hour medical care. His brain was producing massive amounts of dopamine. The neurologist could not get the dopamine to slow down. Amazing thing about all this is that God did sustain my family through the whole ordeal and still sustain us today. But while all this was going on, I've questioned God and His purposes in the situation that was happening. I always looked forward to Sunday service at church. It seemed that God's presence was very close and comforted our hearts. Finally, the doctors discovered a new drug that Mark seemed to be responding to. He is still permanently disabled today. But he is at home with mom and dad who care for him daily. We thank God for the grace that he's given us to care for Mark. We are very thankful for the progress we have seen to the medication which he will probably be taking for the rest of his life. As God chooses to heal him. All those who read this book who know God, we ask for your prayers for our Mark. The one homosexual supervisor who put out the AIDS pornographic brochure began to lash out at me verbally and in many other ways. He began to do everything he could to bring the whole agency against me. I was to learn much later in court depositions that he had called meetings for a voodoo doll with the name Larry Phillips, and curses were put on this doll by sticking pins in the doll. There was a copy machine back in his department that my department shared with him. One day I was back using the copy machine that supervisor lost. He called my supervisor and said that he wanted me out of this department now. I also began to find my personal space invaded by the same supervisor on numerous occasions. Many times I would go to my work area at my desk and find the supervisor sitting at my desk. On one occasion, I came back from lunch and found saliva-soaked sunflower seeds in my work area. I'll never forget the way the supervisor on one occasion came into my work area smacking a baseball bat in his hand. He was wearing a dog collar leather vest and leather pants. I guess he thought he could intimidate me into being quiet about what was going on. I was made aware of an important organization about this time. The organization was the American Center for Law and Justice. This organization's mission is to protect Christians from discrimination in the workplace. I received a booklet from this organization outlining how to properly document discrimination in the workplace. I had no idea that later this organization would be a council that would win a federal lawsuit against the state of Missouri. Division of Family Services for discrimination against me because of my religious beliefs. I began documenting incidences, blatant discrimination against me. The way to do this was by making daily annotations in my calendar. I also contacted the EEOC to find the proper method of filling a complaint. The investigator came out from the EEOC. I also registered a complaint against the homosexual supervisor who had been harassing me. Things were getting progressively worse after the congressman came to my defense to even contacting Director of Division of Family Services. I found myself being transferred to another office. I knew I could no longer retain my current position. I now found myself in the Office of Investigation and Child Abuse. My second supervisor made it clear the first day that she was a very good friend, the homosexual supervisor. So I knew from the outset there would be probably no change for the retaliation that I had been experiencing. One day, I went to my desk and found a hotline report regarding the same lesbian foster parent that I had taken objection to being licensed a year prior. I now went to the home to find two girls, a 9-year-old and an 11-year-old. The 9-year-old expressed fear of being in the home because what was going on in the home. I documented everything this girl told me. I turned the report to my supervisor. She was furious and called me into her office. She stated the foster parent's sexual orientation should not cause any concern of a foster child to take this out of my report. I refused to do so. Consequently, the retaliation began again in many forms. I had to decide as to whether I was going to begin the master's program at the University of Kansas, even though the tuition would be paid for by the state of Missouri. I began to have grave concerns about going through the program. I now had my yearly evaluation. My first supervisor had created an epic of some 60 pages downgrading my work as a social worker. Later, the federal judge would state in her opinion, Larry Fields suffered persecution because of his religious beliefs. Never had derogatory evaluation been so long against a social worker and agency. If I went forward with my education plans to go through the state-sponsored master's program, I would have to sign a contract with the state of Missouri, agreeing to stay on for an additional period of years to pay back the tuition. However, the contract stated that if I was terminated, the money would be immediately due back to the state of Missouri. I now could see plainly that it was management's plan to try to build a case against me for termination. I began to think about other ways of supporting my family in case I was fired. Many of the social workers had secondary employment. The social workers just don't make that much money and found often that they had to supplement their income in other ways. I had discovered a vitamin company, which excellent products, and began to sell these vitamins on the side to help supplement my income. Company had a weight loss program, and I had lost over 60 pounds on the program. Many people, of course, observed my weight loss and wanted to get on the program. Like I said, the agency had many other social workers selling Avon, home interior products, Amway, and Tupperware, etc. I received a call from deputy coordinator's office that I've been investigated for my activities from this vitamin company. I was to go to the state office for investigation to be interviewed. I couldn't believe that this was happening to me. I could see clearly that the man was going to try to create a second way of terminating me from my position. It was also just the case for having an investigator on me constantly. I got to recognize the investigator who had been assigned to follow me. When I would go to breakfast on Saturdays or go to a health club on my own time or even have to go back to downtown Kansas City office, there he was following me. I had accumulated some vacation time over the past 2 years and was sorely in need of vacation. My wife and I decided to take a vacation. Upon return from my vacation, I was approached by my supervisor and told that I was going to director's office. Immediately, I went to her office as directed. She immediately handed me an envelope and informed me that I had that I was being terminated immediately, and I had 8 minutes to get all my stuff together and vacate the office, or she would be calling the police to escort me out of the building. The reason given for termination was inappropriate secondary employment. I couldn't believe I was being railroaded out like this. I later found out that 2 days prior to my termination, the state of Missouri had received a copy from the EEC giving me permission to sue the state for discrimination, so they had everything in their power to create wrongdoing on my part to cover the state of Missouri. Well, now I was out of a job, but frankly, it came with some relief. I felt I had left a concentration camp. All my hopes and dreams of helping others were jaded by this evil and corrupt system that had brought me down. I knew it was not easy to be easy getting employment, having been fired by the state of Missouri. I did know that God would make a way for my family and me when there seemed to be no way. A local constitutional attorney in Kansas City had gotten wind of my termination. He felt I had a good case of religious discrimination against the state of Missouri. I went to his office and provided him with all the documentation I've been keeping on file. He agreed to file a federal lawsuit and take the case on a contingency basis. He forwarded all the information to the ACLJ's office, and ultimately Francis Mannion of their office flew to Kansas City to visit me regarding the case. 7. The apathetic church, and they shall turn away their ears from truth and shall be turned into fable, 2 Timothy 4:4. One of the most difficult aspects of my situation to deal with was the response of the churches. I was an ordained deacon at my home church, but I also had contacts with many of the other churches. Kansas City area decided to keep them abreast of what was happening regarding the case. My wife and I faxed over 100 churches and only got 2 replies. One was very negative. It was from the associated pastor who stated that people like me were the principal cause of the problem. By the separation of church and state, he went on to state that he was against my cause and was for all people's freedom to live their lives as they chose, etc. I made a note of this church and realized they probably were also one of those churches that were reported that supported the ordination of homosexual pastors. God help us. The more conservative churches just didn't want to get involved. They knew this was a politically hot football and they didn't want to be in play. I found that they would address abortion, gambling, drug addiction, divorce, and many other sins, but they didn't want to deal with the issue of licensed homosexuals, foster parents. The idea I got about these churches was this. These are not our church members, so it's not really on our priority list. I was appalled the church was ignoring little children who would be placed in these environments. The reason the gays wanted so much to be approved as foster parents was to take advantage of state law in Missouri, which says that once a foster parent has a child for 24 months, they have first right of adopting that child, so the gay foster parent now found a legal way to adopt children in the state of Missouri. Another reason for the great apathy, especially in certain churches, was that our governor was the deacon of one of the mainline churches. Our governor was a staunch supporter of the homosexual movement in Missouri. In fact, I learned much later that he had been a tremendous amount of money for his campaign for the homosexual community. As many know, our governor died in a plane crash. The last place he had gone before the crash was to a rally of his campaign, put on a group of homosexuals. We were visiting one church where we were immediately chastised with one of the members of this church. She asked our names and we told her. By then, the case was pretty much all over the news. She stated that she would never sue the state of Missouri and that she felt it was wrong for a person who was a Christian to sue. I found out that there is a great deal of confusion regarding this subject. The Bible tells us, let every soul be subject to the higher powers, but goes on to say there is no power but God. So our ultimate commitment needs to be to God himself and not man. Another consideration regarding apathy in the church is where our allegiances lie. Many church members are government employees, school teachers, police officers, firefighters, military personnel, nurses, etc. These folks often become intimidated by a liberal system with their cultural diversity trains. The misunderstanding regarding the separation of church and state issue refuse to get involved when they receive that this could be a threat to their jobs. And ultimately, their lifestyle. Only a real revival initiated by God himself can change the hearts and minds of church members. Only God can give us the faith to stand up against homosexuality, divorce, and remarriage, abortion, pornography, and many of the other heinous sins that are endorsed by the broader culture.
Thank you, Lord. Well, hopefully this gives you a little bit better understanding of what me and my family went through during this time, and we'll continue tomorrow in chapter 8 of this book. I appreciate Mark reading through it. It kind of brings back memories as we read through this again. God bless.